you one and all for rejoining us here on Out of the Main. I wanted to extend a special thanks to some of our more recent supporters. Yes, we have supporters. So
interesting. That comes right after the Total Invitational Tournament Spectacular.
Yeah, that could have something to do with it. You know, there was a lot of support from that episode. Or episodes. I think there was a pair. Yeah. Anywho, so thank you. You know who you are. And just a reminder, if you two would like to support the podcast, you could do so by hitting the link at the bottom of the show notes. It says support the podcast. And you could do it for as little as 99 cents one time or a month or however you want to do it. And one of the reasons you would do that is so the lights stay on here and we keep churning out these podcasts. But the other is because you get a chance to shape the content of at least one program per season.
Yep.
And we've got somebody coming back this season who is going to do a very interesting episode with us. Very interesting. So we're not going to say any more than that.
Okay. You know what we did need to say?
What?
Is Born at Sea, Raised on Radio.
Oh, yes.
You forgot the buzz line.
Let's start all over.
Here we go.
Thank you for joining the podcast, Born at Sea, Raised on Radio.
All right, you can skip the rest.
Skip the rest. We'll just get all that stitched together later. I have a question for you, John.
Sure.
Let's say you had a boat. We'll call it a yacht.
Yes.
And you decided to unmoor it from its harbor in Marina Del Rey.
Yeah.
And you drove it to a land of 1,000 lakes.
Ah, yes.
Where would you drop it and where might you be?
As Janet Jackson said,
did she now?
She did. And was it Escapade from her 1812 Overture album, whatever that was? Rhythm Nation, something
Rhythm
or other.
Nation. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I don't think we're talking about
not yet
them, or maybe we will.
Yeah, we will.
But we are talking about the quote unquote Minneapolis sound.
Yep, we've alluded to that a couple of times, and we said we were going to get to it, and now that we are, as you said, unmoored, we can discuss things. Of course, Prince is the center of Minneapolis. He is the originator of the sound, and he is certified.
As a yacht rocker.
Yeah, so's the time, I'm told.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the Minneapolis sound is this sound that came out of primarily the Prince camp, and other artists that were around him, artists that he produced, artists that he influenced, artists that copied him. And I think we want to just sort of examine all of those different areas. It's a sound of, I guess you'd call it funk/R&B, that is different than, say, what we've talked about in the past, like when we've talked about Earth, Wind, and Fire or Luther Vandross. This has a decidedly different feel. It has its own unique structure that none of those have.
Yep. And I think it bears pointing out that we're talking about, as we are this entire season, the same time frame roughly, because Prince kind of rose to prominence even before he got popular in the late 70s.
78, I think, first album. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And extended obviously well into almost modern day, but had his heyday, say, in the 80s, right?
Sure.
So we're going to examine, when we say Minneapolis sound, it's kind of that sound that rose up around 79, 80, and then through 90 maybe?
Yeah.
But that chunk we're talking about, if you're following along to Prince, it's probably 1999 or controversy before that, 1999, Purple Rain, etc. That
And we're talking maybe then the first couple of Time albums, but we'll get into all those. So at first, to me, the Prince, he invented this entirely new sound, and it's like equal parts funk, R&B, soul, rock, and experimental. Kind of all into one. And, you know, Prince himself is sort of equal parts James Brown, Sly from Sly and the Family Stone, and probably Jimi Hendrix.
If you
put
Jimi
those
Hendrix.
Three in a blender, I think you come out with Prince, and yet he did went his own way in that. And part of that is because he had a different palette of sounds available to him because of the 80s. We've discussed the technologies and things, and Prince embraced all of them.
Yep. And I would say don't stop talking about Prince entirely, but put a pin in Prince.
Yep.
And we'll find out why soon. But it's interesting because those first couple of albums, he does not rely on that technology, and we'll come back to that. So the sound evolves probably with the next album, but the technology, as we've talked about, as the yacht sank, some of those things come into play. It changes the palette available, as you say. I would like to, at some point, talk about what are those elements. I don't know if now's the appropriate time.
Yeah, now's a good time, because I think that our Prince discussion will grow out of this, but he was the first one to me, and maybe the only one I've ever heard, that truly mastered the Lindrum and the LM1. And when you sit down with one, they seem like they're very simple devices. They're, by today's standards, they're very limited, but sonically, as well as programming, he got more out of those units than anybody ever did. He figured out ways to nuance those sounds. He developed sounds that were just strictly, you hear that sound and suddenly you think of Prince. And I'll give you a perfect example, and I'll play you one right here.
Yeah.
The rim stick side stick thing from the Lindrum tuned all the way down sounds like this.
The only reason I was laughing is because you can't have a discussion about Prince without that stupid sound effect.
And you can't have that in a song without people saying, oh, that's the Prince sound.
Yeah,
and it's exactly. Not. It was available to anybody. Right. Anybody could have tuned the snare drum all the way down and hit the stick button instead of the snare. But he would do these things. He would do extreme tuning of the snare all the way down or the hi-hats way up. He just got more out of it than the typical person that picked it up, plugged it in, programmed a beat, and said, off we go. I mean, he would even, to create variety in his songs, he would even, after he's programmed a beat and then he hits go to say, play it down into the tape machine, he would then ride on top of that. He would hit the buttons and add like drum fills live or extra kick drums or extra snare drums just to give you that sense like, wow, could that have been a real drummer or just variety?
Right.
And no one else is doing that. No one.
No. So that, yeah, heavy use of the Lindrum. So let's focus on some of these other elements.
Okay.
Like we stole from Rick Beato in season one, what makes this song great? And we said, what makes this yacht rock great? We talked about all the various elements. We dissected, right, the halftime shuffle, the bass line, whatever. So I have a couple. You just made one. We could maybe go back. My first one was the use of an authentic drum kit paired with some kind of machine.
Often.
It's very prominent in this genre. So, and again, I think it's part of the evolution. So Prince starts with just playing a kit.
Yeah.
Then he gets to the Lindrum. I was like, then he puts them together, and you get that sound by other artists as well.
What example do you have for that? I'll tell you which one pops to mind to me.
You go first.
Lady Cab Driver from 1999. Live snare and fills on top of the Lindrum programming the hi-hat and kick drum.
Yeah, that's a perfect example, right? And so there's this blend. I think, just to foreshadow, I think what makes the Minneapolis sound great is the fusion of authentic and real live instruments with early stage synths.
Yes.
So my next one, we'll do Snake Draft, is the analog synth is a staple of this song.
And a specific one, actually, the Oberheim series of synths, predominantly the OBX was the one, those brassy sounds, those string sounds, even the organ sounds, all come from the Oberheim. They had a distinctly different sound than, say, the Roland synths of the time or the Yamaha synths. And Prince and the whole Minneapolis sound embraced the Oberheim sound, number one.
But you would do things. I remember early on that became less in vogue was like the pitch bends on these synths.
Yeah. The pinch bends and the modulation that would sort of make the sound wiggle. You know, you'd hit like a brass stab and it would go pew, 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 pew. The other element to me that goes with that is the, maybe you have it in your list, is the way the guitar is played. It's sort of a, it's a funky guitar thing, but it's not quite what Nile Rodgers would have played. I think that Prince also got some influence from Chic and Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards in the bass lines. But again, he did it a little bit differently, whereas Nile Rodgers might just lay something over the top, you know, and just ride over the top. Prince has got a lot more of this, you know, it, because I was going to say nerd out for the musicians in the crowd, because when you talk about the elements, we're going to talk probably in the future about modal music.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get back to where that guitar thing fits. Modal music is a umbrella term that's used in a lot of different ways. Generally, what it means is a type of music where you're not necessarily building the songs out of chord progressions and chord changes. You're more rooting in one certain area and kind of vibing and jamming and playing riffs on the top of that. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, totally.
And most of this Minneapolis music was built on this idea, this for the nerds and the musicians in the audience, Dorian mode with blue scales on top.
That is nerdy.
What that means, a Dorian mode is sort of major and minor at the same time. It's rooted in minor, but it plays with a major four chord. So you don't get this as dark a feeling as a full-on minor key. Mm-hmm. And then going to the guitar player and some of the synth riffs, they would play a blues scale on top of that, which then gives you yet another little twist on the sound. So that sound is at the root of nearly every up-tempo song in the Minneapolis area.
All right, so can I give you a sound?
Sure.
Or a staple, an element of the Minneapolis sound, and it's only appropriate that I do this and not you, and that is there is occasionally, predominantly, if that could both be happening at once,
yeah,
slap bass.
Yeah.
Often paired with synth bass.
Correct.
And that's a sound unto itself.
I would say yes. I mean, they did it differently, too. Again, it's that Oberheim, they use that synth for everything. So Oberheim's also playing the bass parts.
Well, this is not necessarily going to be paired with synth bass, but like one of your favorite bands that you turned me on to,
mm-hmm,
is the Reddings.
Oh, jeez, Louise.
And the Reddings, they are the sons of Otis Redding.
Otis Redding.
Yep. And their bass player is Dexter Redding. Pick a song and play a little of his bass style.
Yeah.
What's that called?
That's called Beast Mode Bass, isn't it?
Yep. I know you got another.
I know you got another, yeah. All right.
Yeah, he's a beast. But yeah, so lots of slapping and popping, much to my delight, in this
genre.
Yeah,
he would go in that list of people that were probably influenced by the Minneapolis sound, though not necessarily out of Minneapolis, right?
Well, that's maybe a good segue, unless you've got other elements you want to touch on that we haven't already touched on. I think the foundation are the synths, the pairing of slap bass with or without digital bass, or, yep, you know, and or sometimes just digital bass. The drums paired with the Lin.
Yep.
Are there other sounds? You mentioned the guitars, though. We could touch on guitars because it's a combination of that funk rhythm, but at times, and it's not just Prince, others, they would take rock leads, like Jerome Johnson?
Jesse
Johnson.
A lot of that was Prince on the records, but yes, they credited it as Jesse. But he did play some of the later stuff. But yeah, this idea of this Hendrix-style lead, this totally rock-blown-out lead in an otherwise funk or R&B song, was even in ballads, too, they would do it.
Can we play a little of the guitar solo in Walk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You think that was Prince?
I do.
Yeah.
It sounds like him, too.
Well, that was going to be my segue then, because unless you have another sound element.
Well, I don't have a sound element, but this will go to your segue. The thing that I think why this became such a big movement was because Prince was so prolific that he was writing so many songs and had so many ideas in the early 80s that, well, you mentioned the time. He was basically played and wrote all the music for the early Time albums.
And then had Morris Day sing it.
And then Morris Day sing it. And apparently Morris played some of the drums on it after the fact. But then he created Vanity Six. So now he's writing for a girl group that eventually became Apollonia Six. Mm-hmm. He was writing and creating music for Sheila E. He was putting out albums with singles, and the B-sides of those singles were often as good as the A-sides. I mean, think about the hits that came out of there. Erotic City. Ooh, You know, that was the flip side of what? Probably Let's Go Crazy, maybe? 17 Days, She's Always in My Hair. Horny Toad, flip side. You know, all of these got radio play. He was so prolific that he could not contain his ideas to one artist moniker.
And then he came up with all of these pseudonyms. I guess he didn't want everything under Prince. We got Joey Coco. We got JB Starr.
Alexander Nevermind.
Oh, JB Starr's a thief, by the way. Yeah.
It's time to fix your watch.
Yeah, and then he's writing smash hits for that the Bengals do. The like Bengals, Manic Monday, Manic Monday. Stuff like that, right? And yep. Nothing compares to you. Sinead O'Connor took, you know.
How about Sheena Easton, Sugar Walls?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, come on.
Who are some of the other groups, though, that either Prince was or was not a part of that you think represent the sound? Because there's tons of them. Because then everyone, of course, you're going to get the copycats. And some of it's great. Some of it's not as great.
So I had a few of these like under the Prince in Disguise label, which, as you said, the time we had Apollonia 6, we had Vanity 6. We mentioned that he produced Sheena Easton. You brought up Nothing Compares to You. He wrote How Come You Don't Call Me Anymore, which was a hit by Stephanie Mills. And it was also covered by Alicia Keys and Joshua Redman.
Early on, When You Were Mine was covered by, or did Mitch Ryder do that originally?
No.
It's a Prince song, but who's came out first?
Prince came out first, okay. I think.
Then Mitch Ryder.
Yeah, that was off of Dirty Mind.
Yeah.
So, man. And then, as you said, there was copycats. Definite copycats. If we want to stick with artists, it sort of spawned off of the Prince tree. Out of the time came Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, one of the greatest R&B production teams of the era. You know, did, as I mentioned, Janet Jackson and produced the big hit for Human League, Human. I'm only human, of flesh and blood I'm made. Human,
born to make mistakes. Oh, yeah, that's right.
I mean, their roster is huge. Andre Simone, who was a sort of an unknown guy, a friend of Prince, had a couple of good albums. But the copycats, let's go to the copycats.
Copycats, you have a good list there?
I have two. And they're spot on copycats, and they both come from Michigan.
Really?
Yep. Do you know who they are?
I know one of them. Okay. But I'm going to let you reveal that one.
Okay.
Because you talked offline. Shalimar? They're not from Detroit, are they?
No. Ready for the World.
Oh, that's right.
You listen to Oh Sheila, and you get to hear that rim sound front and center.
Oh, let's hear some of that. They totally stole that song. You said it was available to anyone.
It was available. And they just said, oh, when that came out, I'm like,
this is obviously Prince. And then you're just calling it Ready for the World, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I thought, too. But the other one is an artist that I knew about way back in the day because a singer in one of my bands back in the 80s introduced me to this album. But I didn't think that anybody else knew about them. Because it was a local made record. It was recorded in Detroit on TaylorMade Records. It had a Detroit,
which is what, a Detroit label?
What?
TaylorMade Records, is that a Detroit label?
I don't even know if it's really a label. It's probably somebody with a...
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Fake label.
But it appeared to be self-produced. And it's by a group called Dream Boy. And just to prepare for this, I went and did a little research just because I wanted to be sure that I know everything there was to know about Dream Boy because they're really difficult to find. And I found out that one of the guys in the band was a guy by the name of Jeff Bass. Now, did you know who Jeff Bass was?
That sounds like a pseudonym for Don Was or something.
What if I said the Bass Brothers? Does that ring any bells?
No, if you said the Bass Brothers, I might know who that is. That's me and listener Mike.
Very funny. No. What if I mentioned the name Marshall Mathers?
Marshall Mathers sounds like a guy I used to stand for, Eminem.
That's right. So Jeff Bass was the sort of the founder of this band called Dream Boy, which was a Prince copy. And I'm going to let you hear some of it right here. Now,
that is a copy.
That is, yes. But Jeff Bass went on to become the songwriter and producer, working closely with Marshall Mathers. Eminem won 3 Grammys, 2 of them for co-writing and production of Lose Yourself from 8 Mile.
Really?
How do you like those apples?
Oh my gosh.
Apparently, after they self-produced this record, it got picked up by Quincy's label.
Really?
Quest Records, Q West, whatever, however you're supposed to say
I bet
Quest.
It's Quest. Yeah.
Yeah. Picked up, and they originally it was released, had 5 songs on it. It got picked up by Quest, and they added a 6th song and had it remastered by Bernie Grundman. Oh, so wow. They somehow knew who it was, but it still never took off. But it's one of the best Prince copies you'll ever hear, and it's good.
Do you know
good
what stuff. Year?
Oh, boy. I can find out real quick.
Yeah.
Discogs has it as 1983, and that sounds about right, because I would have been, well, never mind.
I'll tell you afterwards.
Yeah.
So, 89, you said?
83.
Oh, 83. So, yeah, that's right in the heart of it. You would think they would have...
Heavily influenced by, and that would have been prior to Purple Rain, so they would have been heavily influenced by, say, Dirty Mind Controversy, 1999.
Yeah.
And it's clear that that's what they're going for, as clear as it is for Ready for the World. So I even thought there was probably a relationship between Ready for the World and Dream Boy, but I couldn't necessarily find one, and that's how I stumbled across Jeff Bass.
Oh, my God. Well, can you you sent me this, and you said you were going to tell me the whole story.
That is the story.
And I think we got to play one other song, because this sounds like they're trying to copy International Lover with the sounds on it. I think it's called Slow Down, track 3.
It's actually, I think it's closer to Do Me Baby off of Controversy.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. So the song is called, let's play a little of this one.
Yep.
Don't Go. Okay, that's Don't Go by, what is it, Dreamboat? Dream Boy?
Dream Boy.
Dream Boy. And now here's Do Me Baby by Prince.
Yeah, you think there's any influence there?
Influence is being
kind. But it's beautifully done.
Yeah, it is.
Beautifully
yeah.
played, beautifully sung, produced, everything.
Yeah.
So go out and get that record. I just bought a copy, so I always do that before I talk about a record on this, because I don't want the price to go up.
Nice. Yeah, well, don't listen to the billion-dollar record podcast either, though.
Okay. How about some of these artists that maybe built on that sound? So maybe they weren't from Minneapolis. Maybe they already had a career going, but you could hear their sound sort of tilt and change and adopt elements of this. Midnight Star.
What was Midnight Star's big hit?
No Parking on the Dance Floor, probably the most well-known.
Let's hit it.
Barking baby. They had other hits. That's a really good album, by the way, top to bottom.
Okay.
Strong recommend on that. Do you think Gap Band had any influence from them? I don't know.
I think so, but I put Gap Band closer to Earth, Wind & Fire
maybe.
That group. And Cool in the Gang.
You mentioned Shalimar, and I would say that Shalimar, when you hear Dancing in the Sheets, that sounds like it's influenced by the Prince sound.
Well, let's hear a little bit of that, because I have a fun fact. I got a 2-track. So I recently got into Shalimar. I don't even remember why, but I didn't know. I never connected the dots that Jody Watley was in Shalimar.
Oh, now that you say that, I remember when she came out. That's right. Yep.
So but she
I couldn't have brought that out of my memory.
And then, did you know that they were discovered and on the label of none other than Don Cornelius?
No.
Soul Train? Yeah, the label was Soul Train initially. So, and he was the producer.
What about this one, Lover Girl by Tina Marie?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember The Deal?
Hold on. Hold it. Hit it. Stop everything. Highly unorthodox, but you have touched on one of my lightning rounds.
Oops.
So let's go there. So all right. Hit the lightning sound.
Oh, okay.
Here's my buried treasure in doing research in the Minneapolis Sound.
Okay.
I forgot that the song existed, but you'll remember it. Body Talk. Just because I shake and party and rule my sexy body.
There's your pop bass, your slap bass with synth bass layer. There's
love
a
it.
Great example of that.
Yeah, ooh, yeah, and that yeah. is a buried treasure. Had you forgotten about that song at all or no?
No.
Okay.
No.
Totally went out of my, like, not zeitgeist, just wheelhouse. And then I like, came back and I'm like, oh my God, I remember like it was yesterday.
Here's one that sounds a lot like that. Maybe they were imitating the same thing. How about the Bar K's? They had a career before, but they're definitely adopting this Minneapolis sound here. Yeah, Freak Show Baby Baby on the Dance Floor. Tell me that doesn't sound like it comes from the... It could have been The Deal.
Yeah, it's that's a great one. You mentioned Cameo, too. So now we're starting to sound like Cameo. Is Cameo another one that you would put into this group?
I was tempted to, but yeah. I didn't pull the trigger on putting that on my list.
Okay.
I'm not sure why.
You did... go ahead, you got another one?
Well, I had Jeffrey Osborne on here, but I think you would probably say that's closer to the Luther and Earth, Wind & Fire trio, probably.
Myself, yeah.
Yeah.
What about Rockwell? You have them on your list.
Yeah.
You love Rockwell.
I do like Rockwell.
Yep.
It's a him, not a them, but unless he changed his pronouns, but I'm not aware of that. Yeah, Rockwell was the son or the nephew of Berry Gordy.
Yeah, I think the nephew.
Yeah, so that's how he got Michael Jackson to sing on Who's Watching Me, I guess. I always feel like somebody's watching me, and I have no privacy. Oh, I always feel like somebody's watching me. Tell me, is it just a dream? It's definitely, the sound is of that ilk, for sure. We didn't mention also Jesse Johnson.
We mentioned it, but just in a different context.
In a different context. So he had a solo career as well, and his sound certainly sounded like he just took the template and the sound of the time and said, okay, now I'm going to do a solo album, and it sounds just like this. I wanna be your man, baby. Oh, oh, oh. I
wanna be your man, baby. Oh, oh, oh. Here's one that I didn't like at the time, but I could tell was heavily influenced. Was Prince involved in the Mary Jane Girls?
Yeah, there was an ongoing, people maybe called it a feud at the time, but I think it was just a competition between him and Rick James. So that was Rick James',
that was Rick James' answer take on it.
To sort of Vanity Six.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I have a contribution from afar.
Okay.
Mail's in. So listener Derek, do you remember he brought something up to us a long time ago? And this is maybe ties it back to the yacht a little bit. Because he brought this artist up. Is he on your list? Alexander O'Neill.
Oh, I forgot about him.
Is he not on your list? We should add him.
Yeah, he should be on my list, probably.
Tell me if this is a cross between the Minneapolis sound and the Yacht Rock sound. thank you. I had to actually go back and ask the professor, listener Derek, what that was, and he reminded me of that. But that's a good artist too. Who he starts to explore these sounds as well, and from Minneapolis.
Is he really?
I believe okay. so. Yeah.
Hmm. All the more reason. Yeah, and you know, we mentioned Janet Jackson. So Janet Jackson, again, somebody who was not Minneapolis, but when she had her solo career starting, the first couple of solo albums that she did in the 80s that were such big hits, you know, Nasty Girl and, not Nasty Girl, is it?
Yeah, just Nasty.
Yeah, that's right.
Give me a beat!
Is that right? That and then the 1812 or whatever. I know I'm joking about that. Rhythm Nation album.
Yeah.
Were produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, and she certainly adopted that sound. And it was probably a great move because it separated her from sounding like she was just going to go on the shirt tails of her brother. She definitely established her own place by distinctly choosing the Minneapolis sound.
Gotcha. Well, I have a partial flag to throw. And Alexander O'Neill is not from Minneapolis.
Oh, the flag's not on me then.
Right. He is from Mississippi. But according to Jimmy Jam.
Starts with an M and an I.
True. Exactly.
Yeah, it's almost there.
Yes. It ends in a vowel. Minnesota. Not Minneapolis. according to Jimmy Jam, in 1980, O'Neill, along with fellow members of the band Flight Time, which is spelled awfully close to Night Flight, met with Prince and Morris Day at Perkins Restaurant in Minneapolis to discuss forming a band that would be called The Time that would be signed to Prince under Warner Brothers. Following a disagreement with Prince, O'Neill was replaced by lead singer Morris Day.
Oof. Talk about a near miss. I mean, Alexander O'Neill had an okay career, but...
Oh, that's the butterfly effect there, though, man. Wow. Morris Day that is in movies. Well, a movie.
Could he have done? I wonder if he had all of that in his repertoire, the comedy, the dancing. The
Alexander O'Neill, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Matt Morris Day was bigger than life.
Man. He was, man. Still is. He's still a good performer.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
You got any other hidden gems that you've been dying to throw out at us?
I'm ready to move on to the lightning aspect of my...
Well, just to recap, though. So what we're describing here, because we never really talked about it. Specifically is
okay.
We're still talking about an era of music that the musicianship is top notch, right?
Yes, and even though I talked about modal music, it makes it sound like it's a simplified version. First of all, that only really applies to the fast tunes. The slow tunes, those ballads, are very thick with very rich chords and often layered pianos and Rhodeses and stuff. A lot of those things that we had talked about over the last few years in Yacht Rock. But when you say that something is modal music and I explain it the way I did, it makes it sound like, oh, they're just playing one chord. It's far more sophisticated than that because you now have to create melodies and songs and changes and structures that give you this verse chorus feel. And I mean, the hits that we just talked about, even just the time, if you want to talk about Wild and Loose, 777, 9311, The Walk, The Bird, Jungle Love, all of those are modal tunes.
Yeah. Oh, wee-yo. So that has to be in modal music, the OEOs?
Yes, it's required.
But yeah, it's sophisticated. So again, going back to what we love about this era, and they were exploring sounds and stuff that just, there was so much art put into the craft that is not done now, wasn't done before because they weren't capable of, and just makes the 70s and 80s the best time.
It is. And to your point, you mentioned the drum machine with or whatever with live drums. Even though drum machines were becoming part of the sound, they were being mostly, at least in the Minneapolis sound, which is what made Prince so great, he brought it into the sound. He didn't use it as a shortcut to not having to record drums.
Right.
You know, it was definitely a tool that he used creatively.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, with that, we can go on into the lightning round.
All right.
You get a lot more lightning, I noticed, in the Minneapolis area than you do in L.A.
That's all. It's the lakes. It's the all thousand of them.
Yep.
Did anyone count?
Someone probably did. Otherwise, they couldn't have said that. It would have been a false claim.
Right.
Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first? You want to get the final word in, finally. You have not yet the season, so
okay,
well, I think that means you got to go first.
Yeah, we do snake draft style, but you're trying to catch me.
Yes.
Because you already did one of yours.
Oh, that's right.
So you go first.
I'll go first. All right. listeners may remember, depending on your age and your mental acuity, that I went into a champagne rabbit hole this year. So I found some things that I thought were better than How About Us. I think yachtier than How About Us. Mm-hmm. But here I'm just stuck on a song that I think fits this Minneapolis sound so well, and it's called I'm On Fire.
I will not change the things I say. I will not love you just today.
So not quite yacht, not quite Minneapolis sound, but
yeah.
Do yourself a favor and explore some more champagne. It's way more interesting than How About Us.
I will add one thing that I noticed, that the Minneapolis sound, a lot of music, man, bass in there.
Yep.
You know, the West Coast was built on the P bass and jazz bass sound, but Minneapolis, a lot of music, man.
Color me a fan.
Mm-hmm.
That's my axe of choice. All right. I guess that brings me to final thoughts. now, what do you got for Found at Sea?
Well, the Found at Sea was mostly the discovery about Jeff Bass, Bass Brothers, Eminem, that whole story. So I'm going to use this opportunity to just give you one more taste of some Dream Boy. And this is the last track on the mini album, another one of those Do Me Baby style ballads. This one's called I Want to Know Your Name.
Now, was that the added track, you know?
That was not the added track.
Okay.
The added track was not very good.
Oh.
It didn't sound like it matched. So it was clearly something that they added just so they could call it an album instead of an EP.
Okay. So it went from six songs to seven. So now it's an
five
album.
To six.
Oh, 5 to 6.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Yeah. Very well done, Eminem and company.
All right. Buried Treasure.
Yes. What do you have?
There is, amongst the list of great songs that Prince put on B-sides of his singles, which is what makes this Buried, the flip side of the 12-inch of Let's Work, which was a deep cut, sort of semi-deep cut off of Controversy, because he hadn't really quite hit big yet. Yeah. But the flip side of it is a little 2.5-minute ditty called Gotta Stop Messing About. Love that track. And yeah, I think it only was on the 12-inch.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. That is quite
so you got a 12-inch thing running at 45 RPM to play 2.5 minutes of music on one side. How wide are those grooves, man? Ooh.
Yeah, really. And literally and figuratively.
Yes.
Nice cruise. All right. I already gave you my Buried Treasure. It was Body Talk by The Deal.
Okay.
This brings me to my final thought.
Yes.
My final thought is for, I don't know, a better part of 4 years, this podcast and its listeners have heard me wax
poetic.
Not poetic.
No,
I just
definitely not.
Heaping love and praise on my boy, Lewis
Johnson.
Yes. Yeah.
You love him so much, can't remember his last name.
Well, now that's because my eyes have been diverted by somebody from the Minneapolis sound.
Ooh.
The sound. We talked about him. Dexter Redding.
Yes.
Is one of the best bass players that you've never heard of.
Absolutely.
Do yourself a favor. Go explore the Redding's catalog. I'm going to give you a taste. Kind of near the end of a song called The Awakening, Part 1. Unlike Lewis Johnson. Now, Lewis Johnson was a savant, in my mind. The precision with which Dexter Redding plays at all times
All time.
It's like a machine is doing it.
It almost, if you didn't know the technology of the time, you'd think it was fake.
Yep.
He is so precise.
So precise, so good. And with a great feel, too. It's like amazing.
Yeah, now give one more recommendation. The Steamin' Hot album, they actually do a cover also of Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. Steamin' Hot album, top to bottom, is very, very good. A couple of the others are more about a lot of open bass solos and stuff. There's a little less song structure on that. Yes, but Steamin' Hot has great songs, really nice listen.
Very good. All right. Your final thoughts.
Just a preview of next week. So as a sort of add-on to this episode, we've talked a lot about Prince, and it was something we've never done, that we want to look at, start looking at some of these artists, and it's interesting to follow their progression from infancy as an artist to, can you identify where they peak? Is there a place, do they have multiple peaks sometimes? Where do they decline? Sometimes they have an album in their catalog that isn't a great album, but it's important in reading and watching the development of this artist. So I think the first one we're actually going to do this on is going to be Prince. So next week, we're going to take his, what we call his heyday, what we think is his heyday, and it just happens to fit from 79 to 89. We're going to look at those 10 albums. So that's his second record up through the Batman album. And we are going to play a game where we're going to rate those records and try to score them in such a way to see if we can determine which is the best.
Ooh,
something like that.
That might be interesting. Well, I hope it is. But I'm going to say that will be interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tune in.
Cool. And maybe we'll even, one of us will try to replicate that that high scream that Prince does, you know, the awa. It sounds a lot like Ahoy Polloi.